Hello and welcome to this continuing series, Chess Pieces, looking at a game at chess, specifically to look at the question of adaptation of A Game at Chess by Thomas Middleton, because we are an audio company primarily, certainly at this time of our existence, and this is not a slam dunk play for just throwing on stage. There are a whole series of issues about how to make clear to an audience listening what the hell is going on, because Thomas Middleton has left us a series of traps that we could fall into. So we're working through. I should point out at this stage, I don't know if I mentioned this last episode, that we may not be doing absolutely every single bit of the play each time. There are certain scenes which we can just quietly bypass and leave as they are. Today we're looking at Act 2, Scene 2 onwards, but we are going to do some quite significant jumping around material, as we're primarily looking at the curious case of the fat bishop within this play, who has a whole series of explicatory problems, because the fat bishop is a turncoat. They initially appear as a white piece, but prior to the events of the play, they were a black piece. They will change sides. So I don't know whether that is all going to be perfectly clear in the dialogue or whether we're going to have to put in some slightly hokey narration. We've talked about narration in previous episodes, we may come back to that as a possible way forward. There might be some material that we can use, which is middle tone rather than modern tone. And we'll see where we go with that. Reading through these various scenes today, Act 2, Scene 2 onwards, we have Greg, Liza, Lindsay and Tom. Say hello, everyone.
Hello!
Hello! Hello! Hello.
And I'm your host, Robert. And if you want to know our fuller names, go to the show notes. It's all there. So what we're going to do is we're just going to dive into Act 2, Scene 2, up to a certain point. I may stop and start us earlier rather than later. We'll see where we go as we just sort of get a sense of what's going on. Just a content warning, just throw in. We have previously, in the very previous scene, had a scene of attempted sexual assault. The implications of that are going to start reverberating out through the rest of the text, and we will be dealing with the consequences of that to a degree in what we're doing now. A lot of the stuff that does deal more explicitly with it, we're not doing because we're skipping that section. Yes, they may crop up. But anyway, we have a fat bishop. I think Greg is the fat bishop. And we have a little exchange with the fat bishop's pawn, who I think is being read by Tom. I may sometimes be wrong about that. So let's just begin Act 2, Scene 2, and see how it flows.
Pawn!
I attend at your great holiness's service.
For great, I grant you, but for greatly holy, there the soil alters. Fat cathedral bodies have very often but lean little souls, much like the lady in the lobster's head, a great deal of shell and garbage of all colours. But the pure part that should take wings and mount is at a last gasp, as if a man should gape and from his huge bulk led forth a butterfly, like those big-bellied mountains which the poet delivers, that are brought to bed with mouse flesh. Are my books printed, pawn? My last invective against the Black House?
Ready for publication, for I saw perfect books this morning, sir.
Fetch me a few, which I will instantly distribute amongst the White House.
With all speed, sir.
And exit the fat bishop's pawn. I'm just going to pause there, because again, we have this question of introducing this character. Again, there's part of me wondering whether there's just that element of the invective against the Black House. It's quite an important piece of information to get to really quickly. And I wonder if there's a way of getting to it quicker. We do get a very nice oral sort of portrait of what this person looks like, probably from his own dialogue there. Though again, it's not necessarily immediately clear without the physical practicality of a large actor or saying the dialogue. Any thoughts in the room on that? You know, this is our first introduction to this particular character. Lindsay?
Yeah, I'm loath to kind of suggest cuts, especially of passages full of interesting language that I don't quite understand at first glance. But if you were looking for a cut, you could just go straight to "Are my books printed porn?" once the porn comes on.
It's not so much whether we're looking for cuts, it's just whether, at the beginning of a scene, whether it's clear who these people are and what they're doing. And that bit at the end of that little bit is you're right, is much clearer. Mm. And maybe that's just a moving things around a little bit, because he could respond, fetch me a few, which I will instantly distribute amongst the White House, or I attend at your great holiness service. And then the fat bishop could expound his earlier speech there. So you could move it around. You're right. I mean, this is late Middleton as well, because Middleton is very close to being late Middleton. Yeah, there's a lot of really nice stuff there,
At this point, yes.
Well, the lobsters bit completely threw me.
Yeah,
I've got what Rob's got, so I instantly went to my copy and went, "Aha, that's what the bloody hell that means." Apparently, it's part of a lady's. It's part of a lobster's head. Is ladylike.
Well, yeah, I mean, the liver is called the lady, and it's one of two edible internal organs, because when you eat a lobster, what you mostly eat is its muscles, its tail and its claws. But there's two edible organs, one of which is called the tomale, and one of which is called the lady, which is its liver. It's not in its head, it's in its thorax, but lobsters' heads are teeny tiny, and if you're an early modern person, its thorax looks like its head.
Yeah, it's one of those things. It's a really nice detail that you're going. If we need footnotes,
I kind of like it as an image. I like the idea of there being a little tiny woman inside a lobster.
Yes, it's just the moment somebody says, much like the lady in the lobster's head, you're sort of going, sorry, what now?
Then again, I love the fact cathedral bodies have very often but lean little souls. I mean, that was a fabulous line in that speech.
Mm.
The language is great. Yeah.
Oh no, there's some good thing, and maybe actually it's just that little bit about the lobster, which is actually the hard bit where we get to the take wings and mount and the fourth a butterfly. All that stuff is quite nice and paints a picture.
Mm.
Anyway, I pause before we've really got into this, but that's because how you get into it is important. We have more from the fat bishop as he gets to soliloquize. And I will just mention that the way the speech you've got it laid out there may not be an absolute in terms of way some of the verses laid out there. So I may make some notes as we go along, but play around, Fat Bishop. You get to speechify. You've got the stage.
'Tis a most lordly life to rail at ease. Sit, eat, and drink upon the fat of one kingdom, and rail upon another with the juice on it. I've writ this book out of the strength and marrow of 36 dishes at a meal, but most on it out of cullis of cocksparrows. 'Twill stick and glue the fast out of the adversary. 'Twill slit the throat of their most calvish cause. And yet I ate but little butcher's meat in the conception. Of all things, I commend the White House best for plenty and variety of victuals. When I was one of the black side professed, my flesh fell half a cubit. Time to turn when mine own ribs revolted. But to say true, I've no preferment yet that's suitable to the greatness of my person and my parts. I grant I live at ease, for I am made the master of the beds, the long acre of beds. But there's no marigolds that shuts and opens, flower gentles, Venus baths, apples of love, pinks, hyacinths, honeysuckles, daffodils. There was a time I had more rich drabs than beds. Now I have more beds than drabs. Yet there's no eminent trade deals in wholesale, but she and I have clapped a bargain up, letting at Watergate, for which I've racked my tenants' purse strings, and they twang again.
Okay, I'm just going to pause on that speech because we can, before some other people re-enter. There's some textual variations there as to there are certain bits that are in different versions. So all the stuff about cock sparrows sort of is an extension of some of the stuff. So, yeah, we've got this explicit mention that he when I was of one of the black side professed, I kind of want to make sure he explicitly makes it clear that I am now one of the White House. Just to make that clear, that might need to be an interpolated line that we put in. I don't know if it's just the way you're doing it, Greg, but there is something like, you know, coming on just goes, do you like my new cloak? It's fab. Look, it's lovely and white. There's something there, I think. Any thoughts about what the Fat Bishop is doing here and expressing? Everyone, that sense of his role now, master of the beds. It's quite a change in his occupation here. So master of the beds, is that a sort of hospital sort of setup thing, which brings in all sorts of uncomfortable images?
Apparently governor of beds, yeah, the hospital. Yeah. Interesting.
But again, is that clear from the dialogue for anyone listening? And I say it's quite sinister actually for us listening. Tom.
Yeah, it just the whole thing. I just keep on thinking Hieronymus Bosch. That type of bizarre, macabre, wonderfully. So you don't have to get it. You just have to stare into the text type of thing.
Liza.
Well. I don't know if anyone else has said this, but this section is rife with references to the bishops of Winchester, right? Who collected tax that for the See of Winchester, which was the South Bank, which included a lot of sex workers. And rather than try and shut them down, the bishop took a percentage. So that's all the things about beds and flowers. I mean, there's a pun with flower beds, right? Mm. But it's also beds and prostitutes and saying, you know, there's no eminent trader deals in wholesale, but she and I have clapped a bargain up. I think this is a reference to the bishops of Winchester, which at the time... was a man named Thomas Bilson, but just, you know, possibly fruitful ground for exploring later.
Mm. I mean, whether it's explicitly that or just generally, you know, the idea that they might be in on the sex trade in that way, and it's just it's this sort of lament from him in a sense of going, there was a time when, you know, I was in on this game of it's all swapped round a bit for me now because I've swapped my confession. We don't get up to this kind of thing, honest governor. Okay, tricky passage. I like it. I like it all a lot. I don't know how to do more with it at this stage. However, we now have the entrance of the Black Bishop and the Black Knight, and we will have the Fat Bishop's Pawn re-entering with some books in a moment. But let's just see how the Fat Bishop speaks of, because I think he speaks very fondly of the Black Bishop and the Black Knight as they enter here.
Yonder Black Knight, the fixture of Europe, whose disease once I undertook to cure with a high-born altar, when he last vouchsafed to peep into my privileged lodgings. He saw good store of plate there and rich hangings. He knew I brought none to the White House with me. I have not lost the use of my profession since I turned White House Bishop.
Look, more books yet. Yond greasy turncoat gormandizing prelate doth work our house more mischief by his scripts, his fat and wholesome volumes, than the whole body of the adverse party.
Oh, it were a masterpiece of serpent subtlety to fetch him a this side again.
And then damn him into the bag forever, or expose him against the adverse part which now he feeds upon. And that would double damn him. My revenge hath prompted me already. I'll confound him on both sides for the physic he prescribed and the base surgeon he provided afore me. I'll tell thee what a most un-Catholic jest he put upon me once when my pain tortured me. He told me he had found a present cure for me, which I grew proud on and observed him seriously. What think you it was? Being execution day, he showed the hangman to me out at window. The common hangman!
Oh, insufferable.
Oh, I'll make him the balloon ball of the churches, and both the sides shall toss him. He looks like one, a thing swelled up with mingled drink and urine, and will bound well from one side to another. Come. You shall write, our second bishop absent, which yet hath yet no employment in the game, perhaps nor ever shall, it may be won without his motion, it rests most in ours. He shall be flattered with sede vacante. Make him believe he comes into his place, and that will fetch him with a vengeance to us. For I know powder is not more ambitious when the match meets it than his mind for mounting as covetous and lecherous.
No more now, sir.
And indeed we can't have any more because a cast of thousands enters and other business occurs. There's a lot here that is really nice and clear as well. And I don't know if it solves the problems of earlier, but it might be a case of actually we can just let the scene play with a few maybe minor tweaks to hint at clarity, and then actually let this exchange with the Black Knight and the Black Bishop just do the work. You know, hopefully by this point the listener is in tune. I don't know how that people felt about that, because it felt like that was filling in a lot of stuff, and also very nicely playing the other side of the story that the Fat Bishop put in. Thoughts on the room? There. It is odd. Middleton just seems to do exposition backwards. He lets a scene happen and you're sort of just thrown into the middle of it, and then slowly people unnerve it. And it's not a bad technique, but if it's on stage, I don't think it's a problem. I just worry about it losing an audience who don't have the visual signifiers to hang their hat on. Costume is really helpful for this play. Really helpful for telling us who people are. Thoughts. No thoughts? Liza.
Well, we get two versions of an anecdote, the bishops and the black knights, the versions of the same story. And the gist of the story is that the black knight came inside the bishop's palace. If this is a Bishop of Winchester reference, they had a very nice palace, the ruins of which you can still see on Clink Street in Southwark. Got a very nice rose window in it. And the bishop says that the black knight saw inside his palace and saw that he had lots of nice plate and rich tapestries. And he knew that he didn't have these things when he came over from the white side. So he must have made the money to have these nice things during his tenure as white bishop. And now that the black knight knows that, the bishop has threatened to expose something about him that will get him hanged. So from the knight we learn that he came to the bishop genuinely hoping for a cure for his pain. Maybe he has a fistula. A fistula was mentioned earlier in connection with him, and it would fit with Thomas Middleton's sense of humor if to have him like walking around with an extremely sore arse, wouldn't it? Anyway, he came in. He comes in. He says, you know, my pain tortured me. He told me he'd found a present cure for me, and I got all excited about it, and he pointed out the window, and he was like, gallows! Yeah, that'll cure you.
I got the impression it was a sexually transmitted disease rather than a fistula.
Well, fair
because,
enough.
Because of the hangman thing is, you know, when you get hanged, the blood
yes,
flow.
Yes, Rob, what happens when you get hanged?
According to Waiting for Godot, you get an erection. As I've been in Waiting for Godot, I remember this well. I'm not saying this is true. I'm just saying this is...
How do you know you're not still in Waiting for Godot right now?
Frankly, it seems like that most days.
The only other thing to point out is I love the phrase where the Black Knight threatens to make the fat bishop the balloon ball of the churches. At this time, they didn't have rubber, so a balloon was made of a bladder, usually a pig's bladder. Bladders, as we all know, are very elastic. They can hold a lot of either liquid or air. But so the whole thing about swelled up with mingled drink and urine is because they know a balloon is a bladder.
Again, in my mind, I was just thinking more of a sort of slightly more demonic piñata. and all the children can hit him.
It's sort of like a water balloon, but the stakes are a bit higher.
Yeah. Yes, you don't want to be the one to puncture it for all the drink and urine to come out. And again, the thing is, even if the audience doesn't quite get all of the things there, or the specificity of some of those references, they're getting the gist. I mean, there's little love lost between these two characters. I think that's the important thing. Yonder, Black Knight, the fistula of Europe. I don't think that's a specific disease. I think that's just what he thinks of him.
As a big, huge polyp on the arse of Europe.
Yes, basically. And that seems reasonable enough to me. I think that seems, I'd like to read that scene it again. Actually, I'd like to ask Lindsay, could you read the Black Knight for me this time? Because you don't have anything to say at this stage, and I'd quite like to hear those words. And just enjoy it, and let's just see, now that we've talked it through, whether it's all landing more and it's coming in, and whether I can think of other potential ways of dancing through this text for show. So, no stage directions. Take it away from the top, please.
Horn!
I attend at your great holiness's service.
For great, I grant you, but for greatly holy there the soil alters. Fat cathedral bodies are very often but lean little souls, much like the lady on the lobster's head, a great deal of shell and garbage of all colours. For the pure part that should take wings and mount is at last gasped. As if a man should gape, and from his huge bulk let forth a butterfly. Ah, like those big-bellied mountains which the poet delivers, that are brought to bed with mouse flesh. Are my books printed porn, my last invective against the black house?
Ready for publication. For I saw perfect books this morning, sir.
Fetch me a few, which I will instantly distribute amongst the White House.
With all speed, sir.
'Tis a most lordly life to rail at ease, sit and drink upon the fat of one kingdom, and a rail upon another with the juice of it. I've writ this book out of the strength and marrow of 36 dishes at a meal, but most on it out of coolest of cock sparrows. Twill stick and glue the faster to the adversary. Twill split the throat of their most calvish cause. And yet I ate but little butcher's meat in the conception. All things I commend the White House, but for plenty and variety of virtues. When I was but one of the black side professed, my flesh fell half a cubit. Time to turn when mine own ribs revolted. But to say true, I've no preferment yet that's suitable to the greatness of the person and my parts. I grant I live at ease, for I am made the master of the beds, the long acre of the beds. But there's no marigolds that shut and opens, flower gentles, Venus baths, apples of love, pinks, hyacinths, honeysuckles, daffodils, dillies. There was a time I had much more drabs than beds. Now I have more beds than drabs. Yet there's no eminent trade deals in wholesale, but she and I have clapped a bargain up. Let it at Watergate, for which I've racked my tenants' purse strings, which they've twanged again. Yonder black knight, the fistula of Europe, whose disease once I undertook to cure with a high hole-born halter, when he last vouchsafed to peep into my privileged lodgings. He saw a great good store of plate there and rich hangings. He knew I brought none to the White House with me. I have not lost the use of my profession since I turned White House bishop.
Look, more books yet. Yon greasy turncoat, gormandizing prelate doth work our house more mischief by his scripts, his fat and fulsome volumes, than the whole body of the adverse party.
Oh, it were a masterpiece of serpent subtlety to fetch him on this side again.
And then damn him into the bag forever, or expose him against the adverse part which now he feeds upon, and that would double damn him. My revenge hath prompted me already. I'll confound him on both sides for the physic he prescribed and the base surgeon he provided for me. I'll tell thee what a most un-Catholic jest he put upon me once, when my pain tortured me. He told me he'd found a present cure for me, which I grew proud on, and observed him seriously. And what think you 'twas? Being execution day, he showed the hangman to me out at window. The common hangman.
Oh, insufferable.
I'll make him the balloon ball of the churches, and both the sides shall toss him. He looks like one, a thing swelled up with mingled drink and urine, and will bound well from one side to another. Come, you shall write, our second bishop absent, which hath yet no employment in the game, perhaps nor ever shall, it may be won without his motion, it rests most in ours. He shall be flattered with sede vacante. Make him believe he comes into his place, and that will fetch him with a vengeance to us. For I know powder is not more ambitious when the match meets it than his mind for mounting as covetous and lecherous.
No more now, sir.
Indeed, because lots of people enter. There's this whole thing about our second bishop absent, sort of intricate plot stuff, which I'm not 100% certain is necessary to be telling us about. It feels like you're telling us the minutiae of some of your plotting, whereas actually, I don't know we need to know that. I mean, when we come to the bit of the scene we're not doing today, maybe I will change my mind on that. I'm really interested by some of the mm-hmm. the party quirks that are coming out in these sort of in-between scenes, as it were. This is, once again, another setup scene. It's like Act 1 was all set up for the Act 2 Scene 1 that we did last time, which, you know, the scene worked because all the setup had been done and they just got on with it and did it. Whereas here we're setting up these additional characters and then we're going to have a big scene that we're not going to see. How did that land for people that time? I have to say, I still was struggling a bit with it coming across, if that makes sense, even though we'd talked about it at great length. Any thoughts on the room? This is quite the three-pipe problem for me. Lindsay?
Yeah, I think maybe after the fat bishop's pawn has left, I don't know whether that soliloquy before the black bishop and knight come on, whether that can... Because it seems to me the point of that soliloquy is to explain that he's changed sides and to explain what his current function is. And I just don't know if there's any way of condensing that somehow to get that point across in a more concise way.
There are potentially elements there, because he does talk for quite a while. He does have quite a few speeches in this opening. None of them very long, to be fair. And yeah. Even that first biggish speech has a section that is not in one of the versions. I mean, there is an interesting thing that maybe actually it already contains a cut. I don't know which way round it is. It might be that actually Middleton cut some of this, or some of it got cut in the production. Because as I say, we have lots of witnesses to its original production. And I haven't really delved into all of those textual variations. That's sort of what I'm doing at the same time as doing this. So it might be actually Middleton was ahead of us going, yeah, a bit much. Pull it back, mate, pull it back.
I mean, I think that the sort of upper section of that soliloquy is the bit that I find most, just a little bit hard to follow, this whole thing about, but most on out of a, Cullis or coolie of cocksparrows, 'twill slit the throat of their most carvish sense, and yet I ape at little butcher's meat. I mean, to me, that's a bit that I would need a footnote for.
Yeah, I say, and that's the bit I think is in the earliest version that we have, or an earlier version, and that is not in the later version. Yeah. So, yeah. Anyway, we have a little bit to do, and I don't know how practically useful this is, actually, because there's just been a massive scene with where the white queen's pawn has accused the black bishop's pawn of attempted assault, and it's all gone very, very badly for her. And at the end of the scene, everybody exits, and we have this little scenette here. where she is left at the to a degree at the mercy of the censure of the Black House. We just have these little lines. I don't know how practically useful this is, but I just want to do it now before we go into the next scene to just sort of set the tone for the scene that immediately follows after it. So just so we know where we are. So the White House and the Black House have all exited. We are left with the principal players, Black Knight, Black Bishop, Black King, Black Queen, and they are basically all surrounding the White Queen's pawn, who they have managed to basically lose her case against. I'll return to being the Black Knight. Lindsay, if you can return to being the Black Queen. Okay. Was not this brought about well for our honours?
Pish, that Galician brain can work out wonders.
Let's use her as, upon the like discovery, a maid was used at Venice. Everyone be ready with a penance. Begin, Majesty. Vessel of foolish scandal, take thy freight. Had there been in that cabinet of niceness half the virginities of the earth locked up, and all swept at one cast by the dexterity of a Jesuitical gamester, had not valued the least part of that general worth, thou hast tainted.
First, I enjoin thee to a 3 days fast fort.
You're too penurious, sir. I'll make it 4.
I to a 12 hours kneeling at one time.
And in a room filled all with Aretine's pictures, more than the twice 12 labours of luxury, thou shalt not see so much as the chaste pommel of Lucrece dagger peeping. Nay, I'll punish thee for a discoverer. I'll torment thy modesty.
After the 4 days fast, the Inquisition house, strengthened with bread and water for worse penance.
Well, why well said, Duke of our house, nobly aggravated. I don't think I've given out a White Queen's pawn, have I? Lindsay, be a White Queen's pawn.
Virtue, to show her influence more strong, fits me with patience mightier than my wrong.
And they exit. So, yeah, so we basically have all these people gathering together to have a go. The White Queen's pawn, you know, just takes it quite nobly at the end there. There are no specific structural issues with this. I think it's very clear what's going on and what follows after the scene, but I just wanted to leave that there so that we know where we are for when we do the next scene, which is the more important thing to do. Any little thoughts on that, though? It's a nasty little bit of business. The whole scene that we'll look at separately is a particularly triggering one in many ways, because it is all about an accuser not being believed. Liza?
Yeah, it is quite terrible. It's that, and that she's not believed, but also there's realpolitik involved, that they can't impugn the reputation of this powerful guy that she accused. And, you know, we saw that a couple of years ago with the Me Too movement, that there were people who were too important to fail. But leaving that aside, I can provide a footnote. Wouldn't you like to hear a footnote?
Go for it.
So the Black Bishop, who was the attempted rapist, right? Am I remembering that right?
A Black Bishop's pawn.
Ah, that's right, the Black Bishop's pawn. Okay, so the Black Bishop sentences her to 12 hours kneeling at one time, which was a common form of mortification of the flesh, often done by nuns. And if you kneel for 12 hours at a time on a stone floor, it really, really hurts. But the Black Knight says that she has to kneel, and again, also there's like a bawdy connotation to kneeling also. But so the Black Knight says that this has to take place in a room filled all with Aretine's pictures. more than the twice 12 labors of luxury. By luxury, they mean lechery at this point, because Aretine was not the artist. He, in fact, wrote a cycle of, I think, 12, maybe more, sonnets called Sonetti Lussuriosi, which were basically Italian verse pornography, and they were to go with some incredibly naughty engravings by, let's see, I looked up the name of the artist. It was Marcantonio Raimondi. Yeah, it was basically engravings of a bunch of sexual positions with sonnets written about them. And he says that in order to punish her for being modest, she has to kneel in this room essentially plastered with porn. And she can't even see an example of, for example, Lucrece, who killed herself rather than live with a defied reputation. So no chastity in this room. And and then she has to go to the Inquisition house to experience even worse horrors. I sure hope she finds a way out of this.
Well, yes. Though in many ways, when we return to her story, it just gets weird. But I think that's something we'll worry about another day. So that's where we've left the play, at the end of Act 2. That's where we were. We've introduced the Fat Bishop. Fat Bishop has done some activity in the scene we haven't done, but we're going to return to the question of the Fat Bishop, as it were, in this this opening of Act 3, Scene 1. So let us see what this gives us, as whether there's material that maybe is usable elsewhere to, again, this whole question of exposition, introducing characters. Where's the best material to use? Anyway, Act 3, Scene 1, enter the Fat Bishop, please.
I know my pen draws blood of the Black House. That's ne'er a book I write, but their cause bleeds. It hath lost many an ounce of reputation since I came on this side. I strike deep in and leave the orifex gushing where I come. But where's my advancement all this while I've gaped for? I'd have some round preferment, corporate dignity, the bear some breadth and compass in the gift on it. I am persuaded that this flesh would fill the biggest chair, ecclesiastical, if it were put to trial to be made master of an hospital, is but a kind of diseased bedrid honour, or dean of the poor alms knights that wear badges. There's but two lazy, beggarly preferments in the White Kingdom, and I've got them both. My merit doth begin to crop sick for want of other titles.
Oh, here walks his fulsome holiness, now for the master trick to undo him everlastingly, that's put home and make him hang in hell most seriously, that jested with a halter upon me.
The Black Knight, I must look to my play then.
I bring fair greetings to your reverend virtue from Cardinal Paulus, your most princely kinsman.
Ah, princely kinsman, sayest thou? We accept them. Pray, keep your side and distance. I am chary of my episcopal person. I know this knight's walk in this game too well. He may skip over me. And where am I then?
There where thou shalt be shortly, if art fail not.
Right, reverend and noble! meaning me. Our true kinsman in blood, but alienated in affection. Your unkind disobedience to the mother cause proves at this time the only cause of your ill fortune. My present remove by general election to the papal dignity, and now auspiciously set to you my sede vacante. How? Had it so? Which of my next remove by death might have proved your step to supremacy. Ha! All my body blood mounts to my flay face to look upon this letter.
The pill works with him.
Think on it! Seriously! It is not yet too late through the submissive acknowledgement of your disobedience to be lovingly received into the brotherly bosom of the conclave. This was the chair I ever aimed at. I'll make a bonfire of my books immediately. What are left against that side, I'll sacrifice. Pack up my plate and goods and steal away by night at Watergate. It is but penning another recantation and inventing two or three bitter books against the White House. And then I'm in on the other side again, as firm as e'er I was, as fat and flourishing. Black Knight, expect. I wonder ere it be long, thou shalt see me one of the black cows shortly.
Your holiness is merry with the messenger, too happy to be true. You speak what should be, if natural compunction touched you truly. Oh, you've drawn blood, lifeblood, yea, blood of honour from your most dear, your primitive mother's heart. Your sharp invectives have been points of spears in her sweet tender sides. The unkind wounds which a son gives, a son of reverence especially, they rankle 10 times more than the adversary's. I tell you, sir, your reverend revolt did give the fearfulest blow to adoration our cause e'er felt. It shook the very statues, the urns and ashes of the sainted sleepers.
Oh. Forbear, or I shall melt in the place I stand, and let forth a fat bishop in sad syrup. Suffices, I am yours when they least dream on it. Ambition's fodder, power and riches draws me. When I smell honour, that's the lock of hay that leads me through the world's field, everywhere.
And exit fat bishop. How is that landing for people not reading? Because there's a lot of good stuff in there. There's a letter. I think it's reasonably clear the sort of setup thing that's going on here. It's a few interesting. It's really interestingly laid out, and that is authentic, by the way. That's not just someone's messed up the compositing. Some of these slightly weird line lengths does seem to be in the various editions I'm looking at. We have a much more clearer extension of the whole thing of being made master of an hospital. It's again, it's like we get it gets mentioned earlier in the play in a really opaque way, and then later on it's actually explicitly explained. And it's just, why is it this way round? It's confusing. And then we have a very straightforward thing of this trick with the letter. Yes, Black Knight sort of working his enemy into his clutches. Thoughts in the room. How is it landing for other people listening? Fat Bishop, by the way, your ha could have been a how, depending on it on different versions. You know, just giving you that option. Of that noise, you could, again, is this thing of huh noises. There are so many options as to what the huh noise is. Any thoughts in the room about the way the scene flows, or any questions or thoughts or footnotes or anything else anyone wants to throw in at this time. It's quite an enjoyable scene, I have to say. But is it landing? Are people following what's going on? Is anyone confused? Does anyone not know what's going on? I'd rather not if you don't know what's going on or if you're confused. It's more important than if you get it. Yes, Lindsay.
Just to make sure I do know what's going on, so the Black Knight has laid a trap, a false letter, offering the Fat Bishop a promotion provided he returns to the Black House. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Liza?
Yeah, he said he would tempt him with sede vacante, and he's forged this letter from the Pope saying, "Oh, my poor straying son, I would have put you in my vacant seat." He would have appointed him to the seat he vacated as a cardinal by becoming Pope. You're saying, "Oh, you might have a chance at becoming Pope when I'm dead. Oh, it's just so sad that you defected." And the Fat Bishop has been complaining that there are no good, there are no offices he can be appointed to that generate a revenue stream to keep him in his luxurious style. That the white church has they can make him like dean of a hospital or something, and that's it's not impressive enough for him and not wealthy enough. So that's what's going on, right?
Yes, he is quite bitter about the fact that, you know, it is like people who defect. You know, they defect to this the other side, and then they get put in a rather crummy little boarding house somewhere on 50 quid a week, and you know it's not the glamour that they were promised, and the when they've crossed the other side, you know, and it's cold and it's miserable, and nobody trusts him. That's the other thing that thing about defectors is, of course, nobody trusts you because you change sides. So he's probably not very popular either. Nobody probably likes him. Liza, did you want to say something? You were unmuted briefly a while ago.
Oh yeah, just that. This is all So it's a genuine thing that the Black Knight is playing on, as you say, this discontent of the defector, and the Black Knight is using it for the purpose that he stated earlier in the scene, to make the Fat Bishop defect, but also to disgrace him with both sides, right? Mm,
yeah, it's both personal and political. Which is the best kind of action like that kind of revenge. You see, that's the thing. He's a clever chap, the Black Knight. Right, let us go on, because we're going to come to something we touched on yesterday, as it were. After the Black Knight does his speech, we have the entrance of the Black Knight's pawn. We will have a little play with that, and we'll swap some parts around after we've played around with it initially, but we'll go with it as it is for the moment. So, oh good, it's me talking for a lot. Oh well, never mind. Here's a sweet paunch to propagate belief on, like the foundation of a chapel laid upon a quagmire. I may number him now amongst my inferior policies and not shame him. But let me a little solace my designs with the remembrance of some brave ones past, to cherish the futurity of project, whose motion must be restless till that great work called the possession of the earth be ours. Was it not I procured a gallant fleet from the White Kingdom to secure our coasts against the infidel pirate under pretext of more necessitous expedition, who made the jails fly open without miracle, and let the locusts out, those dangerous flies whose property is to burn corn with touching? The heretics' granaries feel it to this hour, and now they've got amongst the country crops they stick so fast to the converted ears, the loudest tempest that authority rouses will hardly shake them off. They have their dens in ladies' couches, their safe groves and fens. Nay, they were followed and found out by the scent. Palm oil will make a pursuivant relent. Whose policy was to put a silenced muzzle on all the barking tonguemen of the time? Made pictures that were dumb enough before, poor sufferers in that politic restraint. My light spleen skips and shakes my ribs to think on't, whilst our drifts walk uncensured, but in thought a whistle or a whisper would be questioned. In the most fortunate angle of the world, the court hath held the city by the horns, whilst I have milked her. I've got good sops, too, from country ladies for their vanities, from some for their most vainly hoped preferments, high offices in the air. I should not live but for this smell arium, this mirth manner. Ah, my pawn! How now, the news?
Expect none very pleasing that come, sir, of my bringing. I'm for sad things.
Thy conscience is so tender-hoofed of late, every nail pricks it.
This may prick yours, too, if there be any quick flesh in a yard on't.
Mine? Mischief must find a deep nail and a driver beyond the strength of any Machiavel. The politic kingdom's fattened to reach mine. Prithee, compunction needle pricked, a little unbind this sore wound.
Sir, your plot's discovered.
Which of the 20,900 fourscore and five canst tell?
Bless us, so many. How do poor countrymen have but one plot to keep a cow on, yet in law for that? You cannot know 'em all sure by their names, sir.
Yes, were their numbers trebled. Thou hast seen a globe stand on the table in my closet.
A thing, sir, full of countries and hard words.
True, with lines drawn, some tropical, some oblique.
I scarce can read. I was brought up in blindness.
Such a thing, if e'er my skull be opened, will my brains look like.
Like a globe of countries?
Aye, and some master politician that has sharp state eyes will go near to prick out the plots, and every climate where they fastened, 'twill puzzle 'em too.
I'm of your mind for that, sir.
They'll find 'em to fall thick upon some countries. They had need you spectacles. But I turn to you now. What plot is that discovered?
Your last brat, sir, begot 'twixt the Black Bishop and yourself, your antedated letters about the Jesuit.
Discovered? How?
The White Knight's policy hath outstripped yours, joined with the assistant counsel of his duke. The White Bishop's pawn undertook the journey, who, as they say, discharged it like a flight. Aye. Made him for the business fit and light.
'Tis but a bawdy pawn out of the way. Enough of them in all parts. At which point, a lot of people enter as there's a complication in the plot. So, Black Knight's pawn, otherwise known in this seed as seen as Feedline. comic feed for... The Black Knight's Mind Palace description. basically, isn't it? It's a fun little sequence. It's very straightforward, though, isn't it? We've got the gags are quite nicely laid out. Yeah, it works quite nicely. I'm not feeling anything here that that's... requires any adjustment, actually, really, beyond maybe, you know, in the edit going, oh, this little bit can go, or this little bit's a bit much, or something like that. It works really nicely. Please contradict me if you disagree.
I don't disagree. And I think you're right about the pawn here being the feed. I developed this impression of the Black Knight's pawn, when we were looking at this in the last session, that he was a bit like Baldric, which is sort of probably meant that I that, you know, kind of was put into my reading kind of unconsciously. I didn't consciously intend to do it like that, but that thought had been in my mind. So
I was thinking more Eeyore. He's just so depressed.
Yeah.
Basically, he just comes on and goes, "I'm here for sad," which follows on from what we did last session of just going, "I'm very sad." Yeah. That is what I am here to be. I am a sad person. Sad.
I did like how I did like Lindsay's reading in that she was very earthed and very prosaic, and it contrasted very nicely with all the flights of poetry and metaphor that the Black Knight was doing.
Mm.
I do like the metaphor of his brains looking like a globe. And I'm pretty sure Middleton's use of the word countries there is not innocent.
Actually, we haven't really gone into it very much, but the number of double entendres in this, it's just unrelenting. I mean, the fat bishop, actually, we haven't gone into it. He's almost just constantly just talking in innuendo. Everything is an innuendo as far as I can see. I haven't found anything that isn't an innuendo from the fat bishop at any particular point. He's this venal, sex-obsessed man in so many ways. Yeah,
I get the impression that the Black Knight's pawn may not know or intend countries to be a joke, but the actor sure as hell can make it one.
Whereas the Black Knight is probably a bit more circumspect with his pleasures. He's a bit too fastidious and clever, I think, for that kind of thing. It's certainly not one to get caught. I mean, that's the whole thing about how many plots have you got, you know. It's, you know, well, plot's been discovered, which one?
I thought at that point in the text, and he says, "Have you seen the globe in my room?" I thought he was going to say that he'd named all his plots after different countries, and that was how he remembered what they were.
Mm.
I don't know where that came from.
Just for fun, I wanted to take everyone to just take a little step around to the left. Liza, could you read the Fat Bishop? We'll read this scene again, Act 3, Scene 1 again from the top. Lindsay, could I ask you to read the Black Knight again? Tom, could you be the Black Knight's pawn? Because you haven't really had much to read today. And I'd just like to let's hear that with different voices and hear other people reading it.
Going right from the top?
From the top, enter Fat Bishop. Let's give the whole scene its breath and of air, and just so I can say that I can listen to it and get a sense of it. How it flows. Anyway, and also just not be me. Anyway, enter Fat Bishop.
"I know my pen draws blood of the Black House. There's no book I write, but their cause bleeds. It hath lost many an ounce of reputation since I came on this side. I strike deep in and leave the orifex gushing where I come. But where's my advancement all this while I've gaped for? I'd have some round preferment, corpulent dignity that bears some breadth and compass in the gift aunt. I am persuaded that this flesh would fill the biggest chair ecclesiastical if it were put to trial. To be made master of an hospital is but a kind of diseased bedrid honour, or dean of the poor alms knights that wear badges. There's but two lazy, beggarly preferments in the White Kingdom, and I've got them both. My merit doth begin to be crop-sick for want of other titles."
"Oh, here walks his fulsome holiness. Now for the master trick to undo him everlastingly. That's put home, and make him hang in hell most seriously, that jested with a halter upon me."
"Black Knight. I must look to my play, then."
"I bring fair greetings to your reverend virtues from Cardinal Paulus, your most princely kinsman."
"Our princely kinsman, sayest thou? We accept him. Pray keep your side and distance. I'm chary of my episcopal person. I know the knights walk in this game too well. He may skip over me and where am I then?"
There where thou shalt be shortly, if art fail not.
Right, reverend and noble, meaning me. Our true kinsman in blood, but alienated in affection, your unkind disobedience to the mother cause proves at this time the only cause of your ill fortune. My present remove by general election to the papal dignity had now auspiciously settled you in my sede vacante. How had it so? Which at my next remove by death might have proved your step to supremacy. Ah, all my body's blood mounts to my face to look upon this letter.
The pill works with him.
Think on seriously. It is not yet too late, though through the submiss acknowledgement of your disobedience to be lovingly received into the brotherly bosom of the conclave. This was the chair of ease I ever aimed at. I'll make a bonfire of my books immediately. All that are left against that side I'll sacrifice. Pack up my plate and goods and steal away by night at Watergate. It is but penning another recantation and inventing two or three bitter books against the White House, and then I'm in on the other side again, as firm as e'er I was, as fat and flourishing. Black Knight, expect a wonder ere't be long. Thou shalt see me one of the Black House shortly.
Your Holiness is merry with the messenger, too happy to be true. You speak what should be, if natural compunction touched you truly. Oh, you've drawn blood, lifeblood, yea, blood of honour, from your most dear, your primitive mother's heart. Your sharp invectives have been points of spears in her sweet, tender sides. The unkind wounds which a son gives, a son of reverence specially, they rankle 10 times more than the adversary's. I tell you, sir, your reverend revolt did give the fearfulst blow to adoration our cause e'er felt. It shook the very statues, the urns and ashes of the sainted sleepers.
Forbear, or I shall melt in the place I stand and let forth a fat bishop in sad syrup. Sufficeth, I am yours when they lease Dremont. Ambition's fodder, power, and riches draws me. When I smell honour, that's the lock of hay that leads me through the world's field every way.
Here's a sweet paunch to propagate belief on, like the foundation of a chapel laid upon a quagmire. I may number him now amongst my inferior policies and not shame him. But let me a little solace my designs with the remembrance of some brave ones past, to cherish the futurity of project, whose motion must be restless till that great work called the possession of the earth be ours. Was it not I procured a gallant fleet from the White Kingdom to secure our coasts against the infidel pirate under pretext of more necessitous expedition, who made the jails fly open without miracle and let the locusts out, those dangerous flies whose property is to burn corn with touching? The heretics' granaries feel it to this hour, and now they've got amongst the country crops, they stick so fast to the converted ears, the loudest tempest that authority rouses will hardly shake 'em off. They have their dens in ladies' couches, there's safe groves and fens. Nay, were they followed and found out by the scent, palm oil will make a pursuivant relent. Whose policy was't to put a silenced muzzle on all the barking tongue men of the time, made pictures that were dumb enough before, poor sufferers in that politic restraint. My light spleen skips and shakes my ribs to think on't, whilst our drifts walk uncensured, but in thought a whistle or a whisper would be questioned. In the most fortunate angle of the world, the court hath held the city by the horns, whilst I have milked her. I have got good sops, too, from country ladies for their liberties. Not from some for their most vainly hoped preferments, high offices in the air. I should not live but for this melarium, this mirth manner, my pawn. How now? The news?
Expect none very pleasing that comes, sir, of my bringing. I'm for sad things.
Thy conscience is so tender-hoofed of late, every nail pricks it.
This may prick yours too. If there be any quick flesh in a yarn, aunt.
Mine? Mischief must find a deep nail and a driver beyond the strength of any Machiavel. The politic kingdoms fatten to reach mine. Prithee, compunction needle pricked, a little unbind this sore wound.
Sir, your plot discovered.
Which of the 20,900 85 canst tell?
Bless us, so many. How do poor countrymen have but one plot to keep a cow on? Yet in law for that you cannot know them all. Sure, their names, sir?
Yes, were their numbers trebled. Thou hast seen a globe stand on the table in my closet?
A thing, sir, full of countries and odd words.
True, with lines drawn, some tropical, some oblique.
I scarce can read. I was brought up in blindness.
Just such a thing, if e'er my skull be opened, will my brains look like.
Like a globe of countries?
Aye, and some master politician that has sharp state eyes will go near to pick out the plots, and every climate where they fastened, 'twill puzzle them too.
I'm on your mind for that, sir.
They'll find them to fall thick upon some countries. They had need use spectacles. But I turn to you now. What plot is that discovered?
Your last brat, sir, begot betwixt the Black Bishop and yourself. Your antedated letters about the Jesuit.
Discovered? How?
The White Knight's policy hath outstripped yours. Joined with the assistant counsel of his duke, the White Bishop's pawn undertook the journey, who, as they say, discharged it like a flight. I made him for the business fit and light.
'Tis but a bawdy pawn out of the way. Enough of them in all parts.
And stuff else happens. Yeah, there's some. I'd forgotten to talk about last time the Black Knight. You know, the making it clear what the Black House's intentions are is to take over the world. I mean, it's very sort of Bond supervillain statement, yes. There, isn't it? It really does feel like he's in charge of Spectre. yeah, there's a lot that, I mean, it's that Black Knight speech actually really sort of goes on long, especially about the whole thing about, you know, opening the jails and all these people flying out, and there's parts of that just going, maybe a trim, there's some,
yeah,
good stuff in there.
I was thinking that, hard to know where though, but yeah.
Oh, micro trims, I'm not talking about anything big, because he goes on to different points, but you feel that there's the point is made perhaps, and maybe there's a element that doesn't quite land for today, but hey, again, that's more a question for the edit. So we've covered all the elements. This is a much more straightforward thing. I'm definitely looking at the opening of Act 3, Scene 1. The Fat Bishop's speech there explicates so much better than the Fat Bishop's does at his first entrance in Act 2. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if actually there's a bit of switcheroo for a few bits here that might work. I don't know if it will, but I'm starting to think that this is actually a better introduction to the Fat Bishop here than actually we have earlier. Just to get that in there. Yeah. In a sense, the relationship's very clear. The Fat Bishop and the Black Knight don't like each other. That is straightforward. That is a thing for an audience to hang their hat on. Okay. Any final thoughts from people in the room about what we've done today? Any additional things? It's been a relatively quiet session, but in many ways, there's not been much here which is tricky in the way that some of the earlier sessions on Game of Chess has been. There's just been some really good stuff, and sometimes just too much good stuff. But Lindsay, do you have any final thoughts you want to throw in?
Just that the more I acquaint myself with this text, the more fascinating I find it. I think it is really interesting. And yeah, that's not much of a final thought, but that's where I'm at.
Yeah, I mean, there is that thing of going, in a sense, what I've got in my mind is that, you know, there will be lots of different versions of this play. You know, we're looking at the hardest medium first, the audio medium. But actually, just because we choose for this medium not to do things doesn't mean it wouldn't work on stage, or it wouldn't work in another thing, or that different artists might choose different things. So I just really want to underline that, you know, all of the stuff we're discussing are a series of options, not prescriptions, if that makes sense. And that any thoughts at this stage are good because we're sharing them with the world. Greg, do you have any final thoughts?
I agree with Lindsay. I mean, I've always been fascinated by this play, but yeah, really incredible. And I adore the Fat Bishop. I mean, I was camping it up to the extreme, but then Liza did a fabulous job of playing it almost straight. No, good. I look forward to more of these and finding out more.
Tom, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I think the audio is the best. First approach is the best because it will tighten up all of the costume and caricature, because it is something that's painted with very broad brush stroke, almost paintbrush strokes, which is fabulous adornment, you know. I think looking at it in the first as a first step is the best way forward. Otherwise you could lose it.
And it's giving us a chance to just start picking away at those details and those footnotes and those things that, you know, when you've got a budget and a cast of thousands, you know, you want to apply accurately. You don't want to just throw things around higgledy-piggledy. Liza, any final thoughts?
Well, yeah, I mean, we've been looking at the question of how or whether this can work as an audio drama, I'm also sort of wondering, could it work at all, given the topical stuff and the amount of anti-Catholic stuff that occurs? I'm just, you know, posing the question, and it would be interesting to try language, and it would be interesting to try and find a way that it could work as theater.
You're a bit choppy and changey there, Liza, but I think we got the general shape of your point. Yes, we haven't delved into the the context of what this play is doing and the various, because it's got stuff which is incredibly relevant and incredibly today and incredibly alive, and we've got stuff that is just not, and is really tricky to work with, and to a degree that's one of the questions, the responses from the audience of this stage actually is thoughts from our wonderful listeners at home. If you have any thoughts about the play in any of its shapes or forms, do get in touch, be part of the conversation as we slowly work towards what final versions of this come into being. You can get in touch with us on Twitter at Beyond Shakes. You can email us at admin@beyondshakespeare.org. You can generally get in touch in a different way as well. It's nice to know if there are listeners out there and that they are actually are you know, you're just statistics as far as I'm concerned. Let's add some faces to who you are. But also you can contribute if you really want to see productions of A Game at Chess and give us a production budget to do more with it than just what we're doing at the moment. You can always contribute to us by becoming a patron. Go to patreon.com/beyondshakespeare, or you could just bung us a coffee on ko-fi.com/beyondshakespeare, and there may even be additional links to specifically give to A Game at Chess, which may or may not exist in the show notes. Things that do exist in the show notes will be in the show notes. Stuff that aren't in the show notes will not be in the show notes. All that remains is thank all the wonderful readers for all their wonderful reading. Thank you very much, everyone, and goodbye.
Good night.
Goodbye.
Bye.